My name is Dan Brown. I'm here again with another A Lens a Day, conversations about information architecture. And I am very lucky today that I get to talk to the brilliant Karen McGrain. Karen, thank you so much for joining me.
So glad to be here. It's so nice to see your face.
It's nice to see your face. Mm-hmm. So, you and I have been thinking about IA for a long, long time.
A really long time.
So when you're in the over 20 years club, as you and I are, yep. What I've been asking folks is, how in your mind has the process changed? Are you doing IA differently today than you did it when we started back in the 90s on this stuff?
Yeah, I think that, so in many respects, there's a lot more maturity that I see from clients. So I'm sure much like you, I spent a number of years at the early part of my career merely trying to explain to people what information architecture was and why they should care, and was often met with a certain amount of bewilderment in the sense that people were like, I mean, as I think we've talked about many times, the idea that when you have a sheet of paper, when your model is print, a lot of the decisions that you need to make in a digital environment just don't really follow along. Like what you need in terms of metadata and categorization, what you need in terms of relationships, what you need in terms of structure to be able to make things dynamic, none of that really existed. And so people were having a hard time wrapping their heads around that. I would say now, I mean, I'm lucky and grateful to get to work with folks like Jeff Eaton, who I know you talked to, and Ethan Marcotte, who at our firm Autogram now, we're pretty much generally always working with organizations that are coming to us because they know what it is, they want it, they have very specific questions that they need answered, and you know, they get the sense that we're a firm that can help them do that. So that's refreshing. All that said, though, I feel embarrassed sometimes when I have to confess this to people, but I have gotten more involved on Reddit. I know, right? it's shocking and disturbing. I'm actually really interested in what goes on there because I don't mean this in any sort of a derisive way, but it's a less mature audience. The user experience field has expanded exponentially in the last like 10 years for sure, but the last 5 years especially. And it's gone from a place where, like, I used to joke that if you knew what information architecture was, you were probably qualified for a job doing it, to a place now where there's like boot camps and there's this sense that UX would be a fun job to do. And so you have this vast wave of junior people who have, I would say, you know, somewhat limited knowledge of how the field works or what matters in the field. And so I look at a lot of the questions that you will see on subs like our UX design and our user experience and our UX research. And a lot of them are extremely basic information architecture questions. You know, how does this work? How do I make a sitemap? What are tags for? You know, can I let people make their own tags is a question that's on there today. And so, you know, I have the sense that for those of us who are in the 20 plus club, we maybe have the luxury of working with clients and working with other people who now have the foundational knowledge so that we can actually be doing the advanced work that we should be doing. But I also am still left with the sense of like, oh yeah, that like foundation level, you know, the bottom of the pyramid, that's still there. And, you know, every day, every year, there's a new crop of people needing to know the basics.
I feel like we could do a whole series just answering questions we find on Reddit.
Mm-hmm. I actually have been talking to some folks about like, should I like organize some like AMAs on Reddit or like some,
oh, you know, that would start be bringing awesome.
People in. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's because like one of the things that I see coming up a lot is like, how do you find people to follow who aren't just like clickbaity medium blog post writers? And I'm like, well, I mean, none of my friends are clickbaity medium blog post writers. Like, what if you looked, I mean, I tell people all the time, I'm like, look for the people who write books for Rosenfeld or for A Book Apart. If you are quality enough to be able to get a book published, it's because you can write more than a blog post.
Right.
And those people are probably publishing things that are interesting. But then you realize, like, I don't know, none of us are on YouTube. I guess maybe we are on YouTube right now. This will be on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. But as my children remind me, I don't have nearly the number of subscribers that a Minecraft person has.
Oh, really? So, honestly. Yeah. Like, what if you were on Twitch, Dan? Maybe it's time to be on Twitch.
This is as good as it gets. This is as I don't know that I can do.
I'm like.
So I feel like I could ask you a million questions about what you see, what sort of stuff you see on Reddit, but maybe I'll come back to the clients, because you said that they're showing up asking questions, and I wanted to know, are they good questions? Like they're more mature in that they know that they need help from folks like us.
Right.
But are they asking the right questions, or is there still kind of a disconnect from what IA really does versus what people think it does?
So I think that, you know, I'm thinking about this, I'm like, wow, yeah, 8Shapes is probably Autogram's biggest competitor now that I think about it. I think there's a particular like inflection point that we're seeing in the industry right now around design systems and content management systems and how the processes and the language that gets used can like, I guess I have seen more than one client come to us saying, we have spent the last 2 years building this design system, or more to the point, these multiple fractally intersecting design systems. And we have this temptation now to like burn it all to the ground and start from scratch, because we've learned some valuable things, but the more we try to solve the problems that emerge, the more we create new problems. And a lot of those problems don't have anything to do with the technology. It's not the platform. React is not going to solve your problems. It's really about how do all the various groups within the organization work with this? How did their different roadmaps account for changes or newly emerging desires? What do people call things? We spend a lot of time on like trying to get people in meetings to articulate like, what is the goal of this? Like, what you have all these things, like, why do you have them? Can you say in words that everyone would agree to the goal of publishing this thing or having this type of thing on the website is so that we can do this? And honestly, like, just uncovering that across various groups in the organization is like, that's a solid day's work right there. And I, you know, I tend to believe, I'm sure you agree, that like with a lot of that stuff, you're never going to be able to solve the longer term, bigger problem if your teams are talking past each other and, you know, making assumptions about what other people think and what other people want based on somewhat imprecise language and, you know, half shared, half not shared goals.
Right. Mm-hmm. I feel like we used to call that big IA. Is that?
We did. Remember that? Yeah,
I do remember. Yes, I remember. So would you say that part of the maturity is a recognition of a recognition that these kinds of problems are information architecture problems?
Yeah, I think if it's, you call it information architecture, you call it content strategy, you know, I wind up calling it digital strategy a lot of the time, or just, you know, enterprise problems. But yeah, I think there's a real, I do believe there's an increasing and very solid sense from the clients that at least that we work with, that this is an information architecture and a content planning problem more than it is what might have traditionally been subsumed as a design or user experience problem.
Right.
And please don't make me try to tease out the differences between all these things on that call. That realized madness. But, you know, I mean, there's a sense of like, oh, a redesign is not going to solve our problems here. But if we are replatforming our CMS, do we want to think about replatforming our CMS? If we're thinking about putting in, not just putting in a design system, but actually building out a design system and having that not just be something for the developers, but having that be something that, say, marketing could use, then these questions have less to do with what do we want it to look like or how should it work, and much more to do with what do we call things, how are things structured, how are things labeled, how do they get implemented in a way where we're clear about what the role of each piece of it is.
Okay. So do you still use the same old IA tools that we were using for years, even those that maybe we were using to try and design navigation or try and, you know, think about a classification scheme? Is there still value in those tools for the kind of more, let's call it, organizational change work that you're doing?
You know, I mean, I do love a spreadsheet, right? Like
That's exactly what Eden said.
Yeah. I mean, I know, like, there's especially with, you know, the lockdown and the video calls and the Zoom, tools like Miro or Mural or, you know, various whiteboarding tools have become way more popular. And, you know, I have a friend and colleague who is planning a graduate class right now. Like, I've taught at the program at SVA for 12 years now. And so she was saying, like, can I set up a Miro board for each of my courses so that I can have this like multi-dimensional layered, you know, experience where I can like integrate text and videos and images and whatnot. And I was like, you know, I tried that last year and like everybody just wanted a Google Doc. They just want a document. Just give them a, and she's like, yeah, but then it's linear and it's not linear. And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, the degree to which I rely on like a spreadsheet and a text document has not only not changed in my 25 years of doing this, I'm probably even more just like, I'll figure this out in a quick spreadsheet. And, you know, if you want to turn that into a Miro board later, be my guest. But I don't know. The simpler tools just continue to feel better to me.
Yeah.
That's maybe why I'm old and, you know.
I don't think so. I don't know that it's a generation thing.
Yeah.
You know, even some of the younger designers that I get to work with show up and love a good spreadsheet.
Yep.
Which I really appreciate. Mm-hmm. I think it's I don't have enough experience with the boot camps to know, like, do they spend a week on Google Sheets? Because you're going to spend a surprising amount of time.
That is a fascinating question. Like I remember when I was in grad school, one of my instructors was so hardcore about saying, like, we are not here to teach you Photoshop. You want to learn Photoshop? You go to the community college where you're going to pay like one quarter the price of this class and you can learn Photoshop 2.5 at the time, it's 2.5. But we're going to teach you principles that you need to know. And I wouldn't teach somebody Google Sheets per se, but I would sure think that a lot of students would be better off if someone sat them down and was like, here are your basic spreadsheet skills. Like, these are the things you're just going to need to know. And if you can figure out how to format a Google Doc, figure out how to do a spreadsheet, do some basic, like, presentation, you know, slide skills, those are things that are going to last you your whole career, because guess what, you're going to be doing them.
So can you talk to me a little bit about sort of, I want to ask you, what remains your favorite, besides spreadsheets, is there kind of a collaborative activity that you like doing with your clients that's grounded in information architecture? What is sort of like the one tool or technique, maybe you've used it forever, maybe it's new, that you love doing with folks that still gets you excited about IA?
Yep. I love talking about content types, or, you know, and I mean that in sort of a, you know, big picture. What are the things that we have? Why are we publishing them? And to be able to try to get people thinking about what are the types of things that we publish that are distinct from what that thing looks like. And that's, it's like, if you can get that aha moment to happen for folks, things get a lot easier, because all of a sudden now you're breaking it down into, oh, okay, so you think this is an explainer, but what's an explainer? What does it consist of, actually? What are the different pieces that we need to have in there? If you were thinking about how that got implemented in the CMS, for example, like, is it just a big blob where you type stuff into? Are there chunks of things that make up an explainer? What's the structure behind that? What's the relationships behind those things? Is there an author for the explainer? Okay, well, who's that? Like, do you want to be able to see all of the things that that author has done or produced? Like, maybe that author made a video. Does that video go in the explainer? Do you want to see that video separately? Like, talking through all of those types of questions and being able to come up with a shared definition of what is it that we have? Why do we have it? How, you know, what's the goal of it? How would we know if it worked? And how does it have relationships to other things that we publish? Those things are really fun to talk about at a meta level. And, you know, if you have people who can go there, I've been doing a series of conversations over the past couple of weeks with people throughout a client organization where everybody is just right there with us. Like, we sit them down and we're like, you have these things, why do you have them? And they're perfectly comfortable to sit there and talk for an hour or two about, here's why we're doing this. This is the way we discuss it. That's really satisfying. And I think one of the reasons it's most satisfying is that I have seen over the course of my career, too often those conversations take place either hidden under the veil of design. So you're looking at a layout, you're looking at a comp, and you're making decisions and giving feedback on what the content is underneath it or what the relationships of the content are without necessarily seeing that. Or all of that stuff is happening as part of the development process, and you've got CMS developers or other, you know, web developers figuring that stuff out behind the scenes without necessarily knowing what the right answer is or taking into account what's going to need to happen in the future. So being able to surface those conversations earlier and, you know, have them at a time in the process where everything's still relatively malleable and the decisions that we make or the things that we uncover then inform future work. I just find that, like, it's like, I'm not solving every problem here, but I am opening up the space for us to have new and more interesting problems.
Right.
Some of the stuff we figured out already.
This is actually a pretty good transition to our lens.
Yeah.
And so far as what you're talking about, what content types allow us to do is kind of separate the structure of a thing from the presentation of the thing. Sometimes the presentation of the thing flexes, right? It can be big, it can be small, it can be narrow, it can be wide, right? So the idea behind this lens is similar. So maybe you could share what lens you got assigned.
I did.
And
what it, a good one for me too.
And what it means to you.
Sure. So the lens that I have is component versus page. And, you know, that one, honestly, it's like near and dear to my heart, because, like, one of the things I've talked about for years is this concept of chunks versus blobs, that with the models that we inherited from print, and I think particularly with the rise of blogging over the past, you know, decade or so, publishing on the web was thought to be like, well, you get a title and then you get a big blob that you can shove HTML into, shove whatever you want in there, put a flash thing, no big deal. And then that's how you make a web page. And anybody with a background in IA can see that coming. So literally the very first professional presentation that I ever gave was at the very first IA summit in Boston in 2000. And the talk that I gave was called Modularity. And it was my attempt, it was my attempt to try to get at the idea of, you know, when you're making a page, you're not making a page in the same way that you like make a sheet of paper. You're making a page in that you have different chunks, components that are being assembled from different places. They can be dynamic. They can be there based on different rules, based on time of day or recency or who the user is or what they've looked at before. There's, you know, all kinds of different ways to think about how something appears if it's a chunk, a component. So 20 years later, I am still talking about the same thing. I think I'll probably be talking about it until I retire, but you know what? It's good because I like it. It's a fun thing to talk about. The problem hasn't gone away. It's just gotten more interesting. So now that we have fairly robust content management systems, and now that we have, you know, especially over the last 5 years or so, this wildly increasing enthusiasm for design systems, the thing that has struck me is that in many cases, we are replicating some of the bad decisions that we made a generation before around pages, except tiny. No, they're just, they're tiny. It's a card. Cards are tiny. We're, I think, again, in many cases, offloading some of the assumptions that we make about the content structure and the IA onto a particular design presentation, like a particular layout. Oh, so this is a hero. This is a leaderboard. This is a, you know, something. We sometimes have the sense that that can flex. So responsive design has given us some tools for making things fit in different spaces. But I think we still struggle sometimes with the idea that the relationship between a content type or like what it is that we're publishing and the relationship between what it looks like or how it's laid out is not necessarily, those things are not necessarily connected, or they don't have to be connected. So something like an event, like that's my favorite example when talking to people who, you know, I need to explain it to, I'm like, when you think about having a calendar event, how could that appear? Well, you could have it be in a big, you know, a big showcase marquee. It could be in a list that just shows like the title and the, you know, the time. It could be in a map. It could be in a calendar. There's lots of different ways that the data that makes up an event, meaning a time, a location, a title, you know, whatever else associated with it, an image or, you know, driving directions or whatnot, that all can be presented in different ways in different contexts. And if you go into it thinking, oh, right, I have events and then I have different pieces of those events and then I can display those pieces in different components, that just opens up so much more flexibility. It opens up so much more maintainability. It just gives you lots more options of ways to do things than if you thought of an event as like, I went to my blob and I typed in the date and the time and the location, and then all of that was just static. So all of those things, like it's really exciting to be able to think about those things as the web matures, right, and, you know, be able to think about them with folks like y'all who are also really smart about it.
Do you feel like the big stumbling block for folks who are, when we're working with people who don't, who aren't as immersed in this, but we need them to understand these concepts in order for really the organization to do its best work. Do you think the big stumbling block is this notion of kind of separating the underlying structure from the presentation, which is something that we've talked, as you have literally talked about forever. So is that, do you think that's the big, is like that too a complex an idea? Is that because of the way we experience content, it seems so interlaced with its presentation that we can't sort of imagine it, that it's hard for folks to imagine it distinct? Or so, is there something else that's going on there?
I would say, if you had asked me that question 10 years ago, I would have given you an unqualified yes.
Right.
And part of that was 10 years ago, my life was really steeped in working with print You know, I did tons of work with magazines. And so that was a difficult challenge for magazines to wrap their head around, because they're so focused on the layout. I mean, it's like you're coming in and essentially saying the values that have underpinned your entire industry for decades no longer hold the same weight, and you have to care about other things. That's a tough shift.
Yeah.
These days I work pretty much exclusively with like big, complicated enterprise businesses. Mm. And I think there's a much greater understanding of what it means to not be attached to presentation. Mm. I think in those scenarios, there's often a lot of, I guess, technical debt and inertia around the various publishing tools and the various like processes that go into things. So, you know, I work with a lot of financial services firms and PDFs. Like, I feel like if I wanted to do this, and God forbid I do not, but if I wanted to spend the rest of my career just helping banks figure out how to get stuff out of their PDFs and onto the web, I could do that.
Right.
But they get it. Like, I don't have to explain to them, like, hey, you have this thing that was laid out for print, but now you want it to show up on a mobile phone.
Right.
I don't have to get the sock puppets out to be like, now Mr. Hand wants to look at it on a small screen. They get it. But the technology behind it, like the different silos within the organization trying to solve that problem. I mean, I have a client right now where it is the year of our Lord 2021, and they have a mobile website, a desktop website. They have multiple mobile apps, and none of them show the same stuff.
Right.
Like none of them. And not only do none of them show the same stuff, but they don't even really, I mean, that's the kind of thing they're trying to wrestle with, is like, how would we even get there such that our mobile app could show all of the material that we have on the quote big website? You know, those are challenges of that go all the way from the conceptual all the way down to the bowels of the infrastructure.
Right. It's like you said it early in your response, and it really resonated with me, just this idea of technical debt kind of extends to really information architecture debt.
Absolutely.
And so it's like, well, 10 years ago, we didn't understand it, and so we made bad decisions, and now we are now living with those decisions.
Yeah. And I try to, if that's one selling point I try to make clear to companies, is I stand by my argument that the work that you put into information architecture, content modeling, taxonomy, that is work that will pay off long term. You do not have to throw that work out 18 months from now when you do a redesign. Like, that should last you a decade or more through your next big replatforming, because if you put it in place and then you manage to maintain it, which is not a given, but if you manage to maintain it, that work isn't going to change.
Right.
One of the nicest things a client ever said to me was a client that I worked with in the healthcare space. And, you know, we did a bunch of work with them on their content model, taxonomy, everything. And they came to me years later and said, we just did a massive rebranding, like, you know, like the kind of rebranding that involves like prying giant logo signs off of skyscrapers and, you know, putting new ones up. And they said, we were able to do the redesign of the website actually really painlessly, because we had already made the decisions about the content structure and the relationships in the content structure. And we weren't having to revisit all of those conversations as we redesigned the pages. So we were, one, able to, you know, do the rebranding. So essentially like change the look and feel and the typography and everything. But what's more, we were able to do some next generation things that we wanted to do in the content management system. So instead of going back and like reinventing the wheel of all the old stuff, we had an opportunity to make the CMS and the content and the backend even better while we did the rebranding. because we had that separation in place and we already knew how we wanted things to be. And that's just like, you know, it just was such a nice testament to saying like, yeah, if you do this and you do it right, it'll pay off for you. It'll make your life easier in the future.
So I'm glad that you brought up Reddit at the beginning of this conversation. I'm glad that you brought up specifically, I thought you were talking more generally about Reddit at first, admittedly. I like there is an audience out there of newer entrants into the field who are having to figure this out in a sense the way we had to figure it out, which is like we had to kind of make it up a little bit to really surface these problems. But what they've got us, and I love that you were in there saying, hi, I can answer your questions.
Yeah, my life on Reddit got a lot better when I just started using my own name.
Oh, like, really?
Yeah, oh, nice. It did. It made me feel more confident that I could just be, you know, I just have a bio that's like, right. I've been doing this for 25 years. And so when I engage in conversations, I feel a little bit more like I'm not just some rando being like, right. I mean, I am some rando, but
aren't we all? If someone up there was like, I'm trying to think through the sort of distinction between structure and presentation. I'm trying to think through. I've got a pretty good sense of my content types, or at least I think I do, and I'm thinking about how to represent them in different components. What kind of advice would you give that person? I mean, to look at it through this lens, as if someone needed to use this lens, if someone were trying to apply this lens to their own work, how would you advise them?
That's a great question. So I think what I would advise, I might phrase it something like, you know, our organization is trying to figure out from a design system standpoint, like, how do we know what components we need? And the first thing I would say is you need to be able to separate out the way you talk about what something looks like versus what something is or what you call it. So, you know, let's say you have something like a listicle. You have a listicle. What is a listicle? Is a listicle different from an article? Is it different from a blog post? Is it different from a press release? How would you know that it was different? If you have, say, like maybe you've decided, like, we have this block that appears at the top of many pages. We call it the hero. We want to make that a component. Okay, well, how do you dissect what can go in a component? Like, is it always going to be, you know, big title, small title, call to action? Can other things go in there? Like, how can that text be styled? Can you put bullet points in there? Can you put italics in there? How much text can you have in there? Is it always going to be, you know, your mock-up shows that title is always like just one line long. Is that going to be real in real life? I would say the goal is to try to disambiguate, like when you talk about a quote unquote page, is that made up of multiple smaller things? And how do you break those smaller things down into pieces that you can work with? And I think most importantly, can you break them down into pieces where you have shared names for them? So does everybody call it the same thing? And second, does everybody know what the purpose is? Like, what is the goal of having this on the page? And with doing that, you're more likely to, one, have to go out and talk to people who are going to use it and describe what their goals are. And two, hopefully avoid some of the problems that you'll have with componentization, where people have different expectations for what it is. And when they see, oh, I can make a thing look big if I use this block. And then all of a sudden you've got people using, you know, just giant text and things shoved inside theirs, making sure that it's clear. Oh, okay. We know what it is and we know why you want to use it. Having those conversations and describing what they mean, that pays off.
Erin, that was awesome. I think we will leave it there. Thank you so, so much.
This was so much fun. So great to see you. Please pet your cat for me.
She's my co-host in these little moments.